Welcome to Cattle HQ, a podcast from industry experts and progressive producers discussing cutting-edge info about the cow-calf sector to keep cattlemen and women in the know and positively affect their bottom line.
So this is the Grazing Toolbox. I'm Parker Witt. With me we have Kimberly Ricardo, who you're familiar with, Dr. Matthew Dearson out of SDSU. I'll let him introduce himself. And then likewise with Sarah Sellers, also out of the SDSU main campus. Matt, you want to take it away and give us a quick intro, who you are, what you do?
Sure, Parker. Matt Dearson, I'm the State Extension Specialist, the Risk and Business Management Specialist. So I dabble a little bit in crop and livestock insurance and also in cattle markets.
And Sarah, kick it over to you.
Sure. Hi, I'm Sarah Sellers. I'm Assistant Professor and Extension Specialist in Sustainable Farm and Food Systems. I do a lot of work with row crop economics. I do the SDSU crop budgets. Do some work with row crop insurance and putting out the SDSU custom rates survey this year.
Sweet. Well, hey, thank you guys for joining us today. So we're here talking about crop insurance, and I'm going to be completely honest. This is an episode that I haven't been looking forward to because crop insurance is not necessarily my forte. It's not something that I've had a whole ton of exposure to in the past. So I'm going to be asking a whole bunch of questions today and treating myself like I'm part of the audience. But before we get into too many of the topics that we want to cover today, there's one really big call out. And if you don't listen to the rest of the podcast, that's totally fine. There is an upcoming deadline for one of the main insurance programs that we're going to be talking about today. And we want to make sure that that information is front and center for anybody who just wants to get the nuts and bolts quick. So Matt, you mind if I hand it over to you just to talk a little bit about what that deadline is, what the program is, and anything that potential interested applicants should know prior to it?
Sure, Parker. There's a specific crop insurance product called Annual Forage Rainfall Index Insurance. And that is something that might be timely. The catch or the big reason to pay attention to that right now, it has a July 15, 2026 deadline if you're going to purchase coverage that extends through or carries into 2027. So you need to make decisions today about a crop you might plant next March or April. So that's why we're focusing a little bit on that or calling that out in particular. Annual forage. So it has to be a forage and it has to be an annual planted one. So not an alfalfa stand or a long-term grass stand. So that one's got a quick deadline and a lot of nuances or details with it. So you want to be in contact with your crop insurance agent sooner rather than later.
Not that one's through the FSA, correct?
No. So that's a common misperception. You've got a lot of acronyms out there. FSA is Farm Service Agency. That's part of USDA. But this particular crop insurance product is administered by the Risk Management Agency, or RMA, and it's sold and handled entirely by private crop insurance agents. So whoever you're working with for your corn and wheat and pasture insurance, you could work with them on annual forage insurance as well.
Okay, so July 15th is the upcoming deadline, and we're recording this on July 2nd. Hope to have it out in the next few days here, so not too much time. Now, Matt, does that apply to this year's crop, or does that apply to next year's crop, that July 15th deadline?
Sort of, yes, which is hard to explain, but here goes. So you would be also looking to get that coverage in place for a crop, an annual forage crop that you might get plant here in 2026. So the earliest you might plant a crop, I believe, would be August. So you'd have to go in, select all your coverage and say, I'd like some insurance on this crop. I will be planting during the month of August, and here's the intervals I'd like insurance on afterwards. So it is something that's still relevant for this calendar year or the 2026 crop year, but it also extends out into 2027.
Okay. July 15th, that deadline. So it's kind of a good segue. I want to take that into some of the differences or similarities between what we're talking about in forage insurance and what some of the more common crop insurance products that people are more familiar might have. So one of the things that stands out to me immediately is just that difference in having a July 15th deadline for this annual forage insurance. However, you can have crops planted this year that overwinter into next. Usually, we don't see that with most of our traditional crop insurance packages, which run on a traditional cropping year, planted in the spring, harvested in the fall. So I'm going to leave this pretty open-ended, but Matt, Sarah, Kim, anybody want to jump in and talk about some of the similarities or differences that we see between some of these forage insurance packages that we're talking about a little bit? Just again, a quick overview, and then some of the more traditional row crop or cash crop insurance packages that a lot of us may be a little bit more familiar with.
Most crop insurance, and there's a lot of crop insurance products available in South Dakota. That's one reason the annual forage product is maybe not as popular as it is in some other states. Most crop insurance is for spring planted crops. You're going to have spring planting deadline or crop insurance purchase deadline of March 15th on those. And then you've got coverage in place for the summer, the spring and summer, fall growing seasons. So that's what's out there for corn and soybeans, your major row crops, grain sorghum, sunflowers, things of that nature. When you start dealing with some of the odd crops or less common crops, winter wheat comes to mind. That has a fall or like a September 30th crop insurance purchase deadline, and that crop gets established late fall and it goes dormant during the winter. So the coverage is in place for the crop growing during early of the following year. So that's an odd one. Then you've got forage production insurance out there for perennials like alfalfa or mixed alfalfa grass crops. And that too has a fall purchase deadline. So you have that coverage in place for the following growing season. So you don't have to go out and plant alfalfa early in the spring to try to get a crop in place. And then the other odd one that's very related to the annual forage coverage would be PRF, Pasture Rangeland Forage Insurance, which is very popular across South Dakota, widely used by producers for grazing and a little bit for haying. It's covering 8 million acres of grazing land in South Dakota. And that has a December 1 purchase deadline on that. So we've got some odd ones out there, even though your most common insurance deadline or decision time is at March 15th.
March 15th. So you mentioned PRF, and I'm a little bit more familiar with that one. Come from a rangeland background, excuse me. But one of the things that sticks out to me, the differences between this annual forage insurance that we're talking about for annuals, but how is that different from PRF insurance, which we see all across the state, it seems?
Well, PRF is mainly for grazing, so you're looking at perennials. So the grass, the alfalfa mix, native pasture is there, it's established. And so that would be the biggest difference between the annual and the perennial. So the similarities are that a lot of producers are familiar with the rather peculiar interval selection structure and things like that that you'd have with PRF. And those same weird peculiar interval structures exist with the annual forage product as well.
So let's talk a little bit more about those intervals. So when you mention intervals, I'm assuming we're talking about rainfall intervals.
Yes, so most of those product, the rainfall index products are set up to pick intervals, 2 month intervals that where it, if it doesn't rain, you'll get an indemnity payment. So you're looking at blocks of 2 months at a time where you're protecting against rain not happening or precipitation not happening. If you happen to be insuring, for example, January, February, you're looking at snowfall, but precipitation.
So Matt, I know we're currently in a lot of the different drought classifications here in South Dakota. I know much of the state is currently in D1, and I believe we still have a good portion that are in D2 and even D3 drought. How does that impact what we're seeing right now with these rainfall intervals? And do you think that we're already in the point where, for this cropping year at least, we would be seeing insurance payments based on that?
We are starting to see insurance payments in large part because across especially the southern third of the state of South Dakota, there was very low rainfall or very low precipitation levels for most of the first 6 months of the year. So there have been payouts already on PRF coverage, specifically across some of those states that included those early in the year intervals. But the rest of that with the D1, the drought declarations and D1, D2, those are much more tied to or are triggers for some of the disaster programs that Dr. Sellers focuses on more.
So we'll dive into those in one second. The last question that I got on some of these more forage-based programs, what forage is covered? Is it all annual forages? Is it annual forages that are grown as the primary crop that year? Can you ensure cover cropping systems, whether they're grazed or not grazed, whether taken for hay through these programs? Let's just clarify some of those
Yeah,
quick
that's where it
questions.
really gets tricky. And you probably want to visit, like, make that the first question you ask your local crop insurance agent. A lot of crops are covered by normal crop insurance coverage or a crop-specific coverage. Like, I want to graze some oats, or I want to graze out some corn instead of harvesting it somehow. So you're going to have, in a lot of cases, established crop insurance product in place on most crops. The annual forage one is a catch-all for annual forages, and it looks like you can insure a lot of crops. And there would be some. The one common one I've heard about is insuring rye specifically to be taken as a forage, and that's the only one that has sort of repeatedly been referred to or alluded to for South Dakota. Because we've got a lot of coverage for other crops. So if you think about rye, instead of planting it for grain, you're planting it specifically to take it as a forage, and it's an annual. That's the other sort of big overarching category you're dealing with. It has to be an annually planted crop. So you're looking at something like rye, and that's the one that sort of jumps out or stands out to me. A lot of oats were taken for haylage or silage and stuff this year. That was a common one you heard about, but it was probably insured as oats, and then they just elected not to let it go all the way for grain. So, so it depends, and that's the one that stands out.
Makes total sense to me. I always refer to rye as being the Swiss Army knife of all of our annual forages because it really can do just about anything that you'd ever want it to. It's good to know that you can insure it and oats the same way for whatever the purpose is. So I'm going to kick it over. I know Sarah was talking a little bit about some of the other insurance programs that we were going to talk about on our list today. So NAP and LFP. Sarah, can you walk us through some of these more cropland and or livestock specific programs? And what should people know about them?
Sure. So we have two programs, NAP and LFP. NAP is non-insured crop disaster assistance program, and LFP is the livestock forage disaster program. So these aren't crop insurance products. They're administered through the Farm Service Agency and as part of disaster aid, but specifically the non-insured crop disaster assistance program. It performs like a crop insurance product. You pay for it like a crop insurance, similar to a crop insurance product, but it's a little bit different in this idea that these things are there for you when you have a disaster to deal with. And when we think about the livestock side, in my opinion, it gets a bit more complex than the row crop side because when you're making your row crop insurance decisions, you're probably, insuring up to typically 85% of your revenue, but now with some of the endorsements, maybe over that. And then on top of that, you're receiving some direct government payments potentially when those are triggered, either agricultural risk coverage or price loss coverage. And then on top of that, from time to time, the government gives out direct financial assistance to row crop producers, sometimes for trade disruptions, sometimes for natural disasters. The thing with the livestock disaster programs is I think it's a little more nuanced than some of this row crop stuff. Well, whereas crop insurance for row crops is complex, you're probably maybe repeating a similar program or choices every year. But with some of this livestock and disaster assistance programs, you really gotta think about what you want to insure or protect and then enroll in it. So, for example, with the non-insured crop disaster assistance program, this is designed to cover crops that aren't insurable by other crop insurance products. So, I know we have a lot of, not a lot, but some people out in South Dakota growing these crops. I've been working with some folks in the agronomy department, specifically on beans. They want to, there's some people trying to grow some beans. Like beans for food grade beans in South Dakota, and they're not able to get crop insurance, and they want to be able to purchase crop insurance, but you have to have a certain amount of acres in that county to be able to have a product. So those people, or for example, with relationship to livestock, people can use this non-insured crop disaster assistance program to insure crops planted and grown for livestock consumption, such as grain and forage crops, including native forage crops grown for fiber, such as cotton and flax. So if you're doing some of these more complicated or different blends or grasses that maybe aren't insurable under regular crop insurance in your county, this can help you protect your risk on those things. And it's especially just for the basic coverage. It's a very affordable policy. It's either $325 for crop per crop or $825 per producer per county. So, and that buys you 50% coverage. And you can add on top of that. You have to pay more if you want to do that. But and they have some discounts if you're a minority or a veteran or a new and beginning farmer. So it can make this policy really, affordable way to protect some of your crops and livestock related things you might not be able to insure otherwise.
I just chime in that the biggest distinguishing feature between the insurable forages like your alfalfas and alfalfa mixes and your harder to insure forages, there you're looking at the grasses or that native pasture, and that's where NAP coverage would traditionally come into place. So you've got grass, a heavy grass mix. There's not enough alfalfa to meet the standard, so then you're looking at NAP coverage historically, and then with the sort of the advent of PRF coverage, some people are using that on the harvested forage as well. So that's what we've seen historically as the distinguishing feature between forage production insurance and NAP coverage.
Okay, so that's a good distinction to understand because as Sarah was explaining it to me, I was kind of happy sitting over here. About 10 years ago, when I was initially getting into agronomy, I was training with an agronomist who liked to show me unique fields, unique features, that kind of thing. And we were out in a red kidney bean field out of southeastern Minnesota. This would have been no 2017, give or take. I remember meeting with the producer, and he said that it was the only kind of gambling he did because they were getting about $45 a bushel for that. But he said the caveat is that we can't really insure it. So it's good to know that there's a program that exists for people who are using some of these non-insurable, or excuse me, growing some of these non-insurable crops, but also that it can apply broadly to some crops that may not meet the standards for other more traditional crop insurance programs or packages. Switching gears a little bit over to LFP, some of that livestock disaster program money. Where does the nuance come into with that? So I know that crop insurance can be pretty cut and dry, but livestock disaster insurance gets a little bit complicated. Do you know any situations that would cause somebody to think about applying for or signing up for the LFP per se?
So the LFP pays different rates based on the severity of the drought. And my understanding is there's no cost to enrolling in LFP. Am I correct? It's a disaster program, so there's really no downside risk. It's completely free. It's not like NAP, which we just talked about. It's not like that where you usually have to. It's more like insurance product where you have to pay. You could just enroll in LFP. It's a disaster program. And depending on how severe the drought is and what kind of livestock you have, you'll get a they have different payment rates based on that.
So a little bit more on the LFP side of things, and I have to admit I'm very naive to this topic and on the insurance side of things. So this might be me being a little bit ignorant, but is LFP a little more operational specific? Because kind of the way I understand it, some of these other payouts are maybe more region specific or kind of a general follow a sort of general level. So is this LFP a little more specific to producers' operations, or how does that work?
That's a good question. My understanding of the program is that it's based on the county level drought severity. So they classify that into different rankings, D2, D3, and D4. So the drought has to meet those qualifications in that county to trigger that payment. And then it's on top of that, it's based on the livestock you have. So it'll pay different rates depending on whether you're raising cattle or sheep, or I think they even mention buffalo and alpacas in the description. So you can cover whatever livestock you have, ostrich, reindeer, goats.
Very nice. Sounds like if you have anything out there, they have something for you. So are these programs, something that producers can kind of stack on top of each other to try to get the most benefit, or are there rules around that or
That's a good question. For example, with NAP, since it's for crops that can't be insured otherwise, you can't really stack it with other crop insurance products so easily. I was reading there are some cases where if you want to purchase some sort of private crop insurance policy and stack it with that it's possible. But I think it would make most sense if you want to enroll in NAP and you want a higher coverage, you can pay a bit more and buy up higher coverage percentage. If you're not happy, you want more than 50% coverage, they allow you to buy up that percentage. With the disaster assistance program, I don't see of anything where that's not stackable. So I think you can have crop insurance and also still receive this payment as well, since it's a disaster program.
just excited to hear that I can finally start building up my South Dakota reindeer herd now that they can be insured. And we might be getting a little bit ahead of ourselves. We've got an upcoming episode sometime in the near future. We're working out some details right now where we're going to bring some representatives from the Farm Service Agency on to really flesh out some of these details and be able to ask them more questions. Which is a great call, actually. If you're listening to this and you have questions that we can talk about specifically with representatives from FSA, USDA, or if you have any kind of crop insurance questions just generically, feel free to email them either to myself or to Kim, excuse me. All of our emails will be in the links. So feel free to send something our direction. That being said, I think we're going to try to keep this one relatively short today. Does anybody have anything else that they want to jump in and share before we wrap it up for the day?
I just highlight the fact that with LFP in particular, that has already the drought has been severe enough that several counties across the southern tier of counties in South Dakota have already been declared as eligible for some level of LFP payment. And those don't take effect until later in the year, so you don't have to rush out to meet some deadline that happens here in the short run. But be aware of that, and especially on both native pasture and improved pasture, those are the two maps of where LFP is happening that I've been monitoring. That just gives an idea of how long or how big the duration has been for some of the drought conditions so far in 2026.
Right. So that's probably a pretty good call to action. If you're especially living in the southern part of South Dakota, talk to your agent. LFP payments have begun already. I know that the drought persists down there. We're going to continue working on more drought content for y'all, but definitely get in touch with your agent, especially if you live in the southern part of the state, or if you're interested in signing up for that July 15th deadline for the annual forage insurance. So with that, I want to thank everybody for joining us today. This has been the Grazing Toolbox. Again, I am Parker Witt. We've got Kim Ricardo with us, and then the guests, Dr. Sarah Sellers and Dr. Matthew Dearson. Thanks again, and we'll talk to you next time.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Cattle HQ, brought to you by SDSU Extension, headquarters for all things beef. We invite you to visit extension.sdstate.edu for the latest beef information, as well as subscribe to the show on Spotify. You will also find show notes and resources from today's episode. Until next time, remember, success is not a goal, it's a byproduct.